You're listening to Thursday Night Tailgate with Chris Mascaro and Bob Lazzari, where NFL legends live on. Back to you, boys.
It's him. He's alive.
And now back with us here on Thursday Night Tailgate is former Steelers Pro Bowl linebacker Greg Lloyd. Let me remind you about Greg's background. He's from Miami, Florida, played his college ball at Fort Valley State in South Georgia, where he was a three-time All-Southern Intercollegiate Athletic Conference selection, a three-time team MVP. As a senior, he was the Conference Player of the Year and a first-team Sheridan All-American. He was a sixth-round draft pick by the Pittsburgh Steelers in 1987. Played in the league from 87 to 98, all in Pittsburgh except for that last season in Carolina. He was selected to five straight Pro Bowls from 1992 to 1996. He was the AFC Defensive Player of the Year in 1994. He's a member of the Steelers' all-time team, and we are very honored he is back with us again tonight here on Thursday Night Tailgate. Hey, Greg, Chris, and Bob, thanks for coming back on the show.
Welcome back, Greg.
Hey, guys, how's it going?
Oh, it's going well, thank you. Greg, I want to start our time with you tonight by getting your thoughts on all the drama going on with the Steelers right now. We started this season wondering when or if Le'Veon Bell was ever going to show up, and now we're wondering what's going on with Antonio Brown, when or if he's going to be traded. As a lifelong Steelers fan, Greg, I never thought this sort of drama would come out of Pittsburgh, and that happened on other teams, not on the Steelers. Are you surprised that the organization has allowed this thing to go on?
I can't say that I am. Can you guys hear me okay? I got my earbuds in.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I can't say that I'm surprised because, you know, you got to think about all the gray. I mean, don't get me wrong. I watch Steeler football when it's on TV here in Atlanta. And, you know, I had a chance to, you know, to meet, Antonio. And I think he's a great kid. You know, I think a great wide receiver. But what a lot of people fail to realize is that let's go back. Go back to Franco. Go back to, Mike Webster. Go back to Rod Woodson and guys like that. Everybody got a pink slip, man. Everybody got a pink slip. And all those guys I just called out Hall of Famers, they all got pink slips, you know, from the Pittsburgh Steelers. I think I told you guys before, Pittsburgh is one of those teams where they don't do a lot of drama stuff. You know, when you come to Pittsburgh, it's more like a, hey, you should be happy we chose you to play for us. Not that we're happy to have you here, but you should be happy that we chose you. That's the way Pittsburgh Steelers, you know, run their organization. So, surprised, I'm not saying I'm surprised. I just, like you guys, I wish they would kind of get it together and figure it out. But, you know, everybody needs a little bit of drama. You know, everybody needs a little bit of drama to keep their names in there. And that's the new thing now. You know, you create drama to keep your name out there, to keep things going. So, surprised, no. Not in this new age of, you know, the me player that's all about me and stuff like that. I'm not surprised at all.
If this had happened back when you played, would it get this far? Is this seems to be a kind of thing, like, you know, that you guys would have crowded him in the locker room and said, we don't do that here, right? That it would have stayed handled in the locker room.
Well, I think, like I said, now where you guys are talking about what's going on right now, I'll be totally honest with you. I have no idea. I mean, in the entire Super Bowl, all that stuff, I was here. I played golf. I went to one event with Franco and those guys and Jerome and those guys. But I have no clue as to, other than that, you know, this guy just may be unhappy or whatever. I have no clue as to what's going on there. I mean, that's how much I am not in that loop of what's going on there. So I may not be the guy that you might want to, you know, you want to talk to about it. But to answer your question, you know, when we played, it was, you know, we had some guys. I think, like, Rod's first year. Rod was in the same draft as Woody. Woodson came in, you know, 87 with me, you know, first rounder. And like I say, you know, before he played, you know, he had some, you know, that's what first rounders do. First rounders always hold out and stuff like that. But after that, I mean, you know, Woody showed up, man. Woody showed up and became a pillar, you know, in our defense and things of that nature. And, you know, we never had guys that acted up. Because if you did, you know, you had to understand, I'm a Chuck Noll baby, too. You know, I came in with Chuck Noll drafted me in 87. And so Chuck Noll was one of those guys that Chuck didn't care if you could play or you couldn't, you know, he didn't care where you were from. He didn't care about all that stuff. You know, if you got in the end zone and you danced and did all that old stupid stuff in our era, Chuck would pull you aside and say, hey, you know, I like you been there before. That kind of stuff. So, no, I mean, and I know it's a different game now. It's like, you know, you got these normal men, they want to see all the dancing and all that stuff. which has absolutely nothing to do with football. And it's like, it's just, for me, it just, it takes away from what the game should be about. I mean, I say, when we play, I heard a guy earlier, you know, talking about, you know, Mel Blount. By the way, I wore number 47 in college too. But, you know, it was a, it's just one of those things where, you know, let's make football about football. Let's not make it about dancing. Let's not make it about contracts. Let's not make it about, oh, I'm scared, or, you know, I want to be a part of, you know, this, and I don't want to be that, or I'm mad about, that's not football. It makes great stories, you know, for us to go on the radio and television, you know, and everywhere else to talk about, but it's not football. You know, all I care about is seeing Antonio Brown line up and Ben Roethlisberger or whoever's going to be quarterback there, throw him a pass, catch touchdown. That's all I care about when I'm watching football. All the other stuff that happens off the field, I could give a rat, cotton. Okay? I'm going to say it like that. But, cause it's not, it's for guys like me who played the game, it's not important. But for people who want good television and something to talk about the next day, it's, you know, that's what they want to hear. So, no, I think we would have, you know, we would have talked to the guy. I think we would have, you know, let him know that we need him. But after a while, guys would have looked around and said, hey, man, listen, he's not here. Ain't nothing we can do about it. Next guy up, let's play with that guy. Let's, you know, we let's win with that guy. We love to be able to win with this guy, but if he don't want to play, we gotta get ready for next week. That's how the game should be. You know, like, I don't think one guy is a team. I don't think one guy is an island in football. That's why it's a team sport, you know, and I think that Antonio is a very important part of the Steelers, just like Le'Veon Bell was. But at the end of the day, you know, people get replaced, man. Like you say, somebody replaced Franco, somebody replaced, you know, Rocky, somebody replaced Mike Webster, you know, DeMonte did a great job of doing that, became a Hall of Famer at that, you know, so people get replaced, and there's reasons behind it, so maybe this is the time, you know. Now, you say, I love my Steelers now, I bleed black and gold, but it's kind of like a dysfunctional thing going on over there, and eventually I think, you know, Tom will get it together, you know, he's wise, he's smart, he'll get it together, I promise you that.
Greg, you mentioned Chuck Knoll, and I started to see a lot of comparisons between Chuck Knoll and Bill Belichick now. Do you see similarities in the two and how they go about not only their demeanors, but how they're able to coach and consistently be good year after year?
Well, yeah, I do. And I'm not I can't say what I want to say. I mean, Belichick finds a way to win. Let's give him that credit. Everybody may not like him and things of that nature. I can't say he's at the top of my fan, you know, favorite list of coaches, but, you respect them. That's all guys like that want. I mean, when we were playing ball, you know, we had a lot of people that didn't like us. I'm sure these guys did. But all you care is that people respect what you did. And I respect the heck out of a guy that can go to eight Super Bowls or nine Super Bowls and win 6 out of 9 or 6 out of 8. Man, I mean, you know, you have to respect that. But as regards to Coach Knoll, I hope there's some old Steelers that are probably listening to this, and I don't ever want to get in trouble or get cornered by any of those guys. But, you know, Coach Knoll won 4, this guy's 1-6, so, you know, you're talking about, you know, dynasties, you know, you got dynasties. But the similarities are so similar. I mean, Belichick has had to come through different, you know, he's had to come through different eras where he's had to get his guys motivated. And he's playing with, like I said, he's got players on his team, guys, that are not superstars. He don't have one guy over there that, you know, that's pretty much, you know, the superstar, maybe two. You know, a Gronk and Brady there. I mean, everybody else is just middle of the road guys. You know, I mean, and again, the game has changed so much that, you know, just different, but these guys just manage every year. Somehow we talk about, let's not hit in practice. Let's not do this in practice. Let's not do that in practice. Somehow the Patriots manage to learn how to, they know how to tackle. They know how to cover guys. They know how to block guys. So obviously somewhere, what everybody else isn't doing, they're doing it, and they're getting the job done. So, you know, maybe people should, you know, do some spy games, start spying on what those guys are doing, you know, and go ahead and do it. I don't know. But, I mean, man, it works. You know, you look up every year and you think, man, they ain't got nobody. And they're playing. I mean, you know, they got linebackers running and getting sacks on these guys. Like, who are these guys? You guys understand what I'm saying. And there's no disrespect to these guys. These guys won the Super Bowl, but they're winning Super Bowls with 1 or 2 superstars. Like you say, you need to have a whole bunch of superstars, a whole bunch of name guys. And see, what you need to have is some guys on your team that are, you know, that buy into, you know, what's going on. that are sold out. They're saying, you know, regardless, here's what I'm gonna do, and I'm not gonna stick my head where it don't belong, and I'm gonna go out here and I'm gonna play team ball. I'm not gonna play me ball, but I'm gonna play team ball. I think those guys buy into it, you know, and everything. And like you say, you know, you like to see somebody else, you know, in the Super Bowl other than these guys, but you say, man, you gotta take your hats off to them. These guys manage every year. Every year people count them out. Guess what? There they are. So, and the similarities are, like you say, you know, you got coaches that are dynasties that manage to get it done. And times have changed, you know, like everybody. I mean, like Steelers, we had a turnaround when I was coming there. It took us a while to turn around to become, you know, where these guys are now. And, you know, that kind of started with us, you know, getting in there. And the Patriots have done that. You know, it's cool. They'll hit their, you know, that chance of, you know, when they start going down and things of that nature. But, you know, I think as long as Belichick is around, you know, those guys got a chance to be in the AFC Championship and the playoffs every year, man. I mean, you know, that's off to them.
Bob, questions for Greg?
Greg, you had mentioned Mike Webster a couple times already, and I just find him to be a fascinating story. Sadly, the way he passed away and his life after football. But to me, Greg, he was the poster boy for lunch pail type players, guys that played hurt, and toughness. And I think he was 36 years old when you came in the league, and he would play a couple more years after that, I think, in Kansas City. But tell us more about him, his toughness, and just your memory of him playing that year with him.
Well, you know, when I got there in 87, it was a strike year. And, you know, guys were on strike, and, you know, we did not know nothing about that. And I was coming from, you know, again, I was coming from, you know, a Division II black college where all I wanted to do was play football. And they started talking about strike, and I'm looking like, I don't know what that means. I just want to play football. And then I had Webby. I remember Webby and those guys, you know, going places and working. We were all working out together. I think that is, so when all this stuff broke, I think Webby may have crossed the line, and guys were like, what? You know, stuff like that. You know, nobody knew anything financial and stuff like that. That wasn't there. Everybody was just thinking like, not Webby. And then, you know, nobody said anything to him because who he was. And, you know, at some point, man's got to do what he's got to do. And I never forget about father for. But I just remember, I think I may have told you guys that incident where, you know, just in practice, you know, Webby was one of those guys, man, when he came out to practice, I mean, you know, he wouldn't wallow out there. He was just like, you know, he just big thundering cat would come out there. And then, you know, he's got that bald spot where all the hair is missing. But he's got a set of mittens on him, man, that are like, if he grabs you, it's over. You know, and you knew that. And so, you know, Ben, you know, coming in running scout team, you know, you're running stuff, and you leery that he's in there. And when he grabs you, you knew he grabbed you and things of that nature. But, you know, the guy just never quit. I tell you, he took me to the top one off season. He took me to the top three of the stadium, and we ran top tier stairs, up, you know, running up, walk down, crossover run, walk down. And I'm thinking he's just going to run, you know, maybe about 10 of them, and we're going to go back in. Every one of them. And it was all I could do to keep up with this old man, and all I could tell myself is I'm not going to let this old man beat me. You know, and in my head, I knew he was Mike Webster, but at that point, it was like, I just can't let this old man beat me. But man, he showed me. But Mike was the epitome of, like you said, he came to work and he played. He came to work, man. He put on his, you know, probably with the tighter. I had never seen a guy with a tighter pair of jeans on than him and cowboy boots. But every day he either got them on, his tennis shoes, he comes in and he gets in that weight room. And next thing you know, he's in that film room. You know, that's how you got to be a Hall of Famer. But he just, you know, Mike was one of those guys. If you lined up in front of him, man, you knew you were going to war. You knew you were going to war. And he was that. And, you know, guys looked up to him, guys looked toward him, but just a quiet guy. You know, you didn't hear Mike talk a lot. He wasn't me. You know, I talked a lot when I was there, you know, kept, you know, guys laughing, and we said a lot of stuff, you know, giving guys to, you know, the business. But Mike wasn't like that. He'd come in, sit down, he had a couple guys, he was just kind of quiet. And, rarely did you hear him talk. But, you know, when he was on the football field, you knew 5'2", you knew 52 was out there. You know, he is one of the few guys right now. I think Mike is the only somebody whose jersey that I have at my house. Of all the Steelers, I only have Mike Webster jersey in my collection. He's the only somebody that you guys said, just gave me chills. His is the only jersey that I have. Because, I mean, we had a connection there, and, you know, he used to sit there and laugh, and, you know, he would tell me stuff like when I was going scout team. he would always say, hey, you keep doing that, man, you're going to be good. But he was hammering. You know, it's like, come on, keep coming back. I like this. He's hammering me. And I kept going, man, I cannot get past this, you know, past this guy. But just, you know, an outstanding guy, you know, outstanding dad and, you know, just a leader on the team, you know, but Mike led by example. He didn't lead, he didn't do this, you know, I think if he was here in his era now, he would probably be like me. He wouldn't have a Twitter account or anything like that. He'd just go out and play, you know.
And Greg, as far as on the defensive side of the ball, I hate to put you on the spot, but you play with so many great guys and they all made you better. Your coaches made you better, but was there a couple guys that come to mind right off the bat that you said, being on the same field with these guys made me a better linebacker for all my 11 years?
Oh, man. Well, to start out with, you know, anytime you're playing linebacker, and you know, you got three scholarships, man. You got to be able to tackle. You got to be able to rush the passer. And you got to cover, you know. And so I'm going to say this. I don't want to leave anybody out. Every defensive lineman that I played with made me better. Every linebacker that I played with made me better. Every cornerback, safety that I played with made me better, you know. And then I'm going to take it another step further. Those guys that I lined up against every week and gave us a look, those scout team guys, those guys made the difference. Those guys, like they were like me going against Mike Webster. They made a difference because they made you get after. But I can say, like they said, I can call names that games that you got. You start looking at guys like, you know, Joel Steed, Donald Evans, Ray Steele, Rod Woodson, Carnell Lake, Darren Perry, you know, all three of my all-pro linebackers, Chad Brown, LK, LeVon Kirkson, Kevin Green, you know, even Jason Gilden. You know, we just had a core guys, but then again, you know, we had, you think about out of that era there, I mean, you had Dick LeBeau, who was the defensive back coach, became, you know, head coach. You had Marvin Lewis, who was the linebacker coach, became head coach. You had, Dom Capers, who was the DC defense coordinator, who became head coach. So, you know, we just had a slew of guys that were there, and they were all perfection. They made you better by, basically, and sometimes it was irritating. You could say it was ticking you off, but it was like, hey, you make a play and they come in there. Hey, listen, you could be just a shade hairy inside. And you were going, you would look at them like, are you kidding me? Did you really just say that? That's what you would say on the inside. But I thought, you go, okay, I know he just wanted me to get it because there's not a lot that he could really say. You know, he just wanted to say, you know, I'm still coaching. Yeah. You know, you're not there yet. So you can just shade it. And that's what you would do. You go, okay, coach, you know, and you just keep it moving. Sometimes that's not what you wanted to say, but you know, I say being professional, you know, it's like in any business now, you know, boss comes in and he says, this, you've done a good job, but he's got to let you know that you're not ready to take over his job yet. So he's got to like, you know, cut you down just a little bit. But I appreciate it. I really did. And you really worked that task of, you know, making sure that you try to do that. But I think, man, like I said, Marvin Lewis, you know, stayed in my rear end and he irritated me to the point where I wanted to be perfect. No such thing, but it made me a better player. Like you say, you know, challenging Kevin to meet me at the quarterback, you know, to who's going to get the next sack, who's going to do this, making, you know, getting to the quarterback in time enough. And if he did get there, you know, I got two corners in Rod Woodson and Willie Williams over there. And even if we don't get there in time, we got two corners that can cover anybody in the league, you know. So it just, everybody made everybody better, man. And, you know, and that was sometimes you took some chances and these guys took some chances. But like you say, everything wasn't always that way, man. You know, we played together for a while before we got it together. But everything wasn't always that way, man. We done lost some, you know, some 51 and the 10 games. You know, went 5 and 11 and 6 and 10. We've done that. But we paid the price, and you know, and like you say, but all those guys, man, all those guys, I mean, we practice a certain way. If you talk to those guys right now, they'll tell you one thing about me. That's how I practice. I practice at one speed. And if you didn't practice at my speed, we got issues. And when everybody bought into it, it's like, listen, we practice like this game is going to be easy because we got all these commercial breaks and all this other crazy stuff that's going on. We have got to practice at a pace where nobody can keep up with it. If they can't keep up with us over there, that doesn't take. And so that's what we did. The guys bought into it. And you have to go out there. You have to start, especially on days when it feels like 105 degrees outside, you know, things like that. Nobody wants that. So, you know, you got to push through it. And, you know, we had a bunch of great guys, man, that bought into it. And, you know, we're all, you know, still pretty close right now.
Greg, just a couple more before we let you go. And you know you're my all-time favorite player. And
well,
I know
I
you're
appreciate it.
Absolutely. And you're, I know you're a pretty private guy. And as you became more and more successful in the early to mid 90s and more well known, did it become hard being Greg Lloyd at some point?
No, not at all. I mean, you know, you know how you do it. I mean, I look back at it now and I didn't view it that way then, but I kind of did, but I didn't probably, I probably wouldn't say it the same way. We were actors playing a role. That makes sense? If you watch the people
yeah.
that are in the movies and they're actors playing roles. And then people get upset with some people when they see them because they don't understand what's real and what's not real. And he's like, hey, you should have said that on this. He's like, hey, listen, that's the movie. I get paid to do that, you know, kind of thing. That's how, you know, people do. And so I was kind of like that too because I didn't understand that, you know, as a kid, not as a kid. But as an adult, you go out and you understand that, you know, they're actually going to pay me to do something. They're actually going to pay me to do something that I enjoy doing. I enjoy doing it. If they're going to pay me to do it, hey, that's great. But over a period of time, what you learn to do is you learn not, yeah, I think Coach Powell says it does. You learn not to get too high with the high, not to get too low with the low. I understand this is not about me. It's about my team. I'm going to try to, I got to be the best Greg I can be in order for my team to give my team a chance to win. I got to be the best Greg I can be. But handling the success, if I could go back and do it again, I would do it differently because I didn't do a great job of it. I didn't do, and I say that right now. I didn't do a great job of it. And, you know, it caused me, marriage, you know, and I apologize again to my wife and kids. It caused me a marriage. It caused me, because, you know, you thought you were bigger than what it was. You started doing things that were not who you are. You became number 95 and you weren't Greg Lloyd, the father, the husband and all those things. So those are some of the things that I regret now. If I could do it all over again, I would say, but, I never got bigger than the game, you know, and like I say, at some point, you know, I could handle what was happening on the field. It was the handling of trying not to be number 95 off the field was always, and it's always going to be tough for all the guys, you know, trying to be just normal, I guess would be the thing, you know, and I guess that sounds kind of crazy, but you know, people put us on a pedestal and they think that, you know, we don't go to the bank. Somebody banks for us. We don't get our car washed. Nobody washes our car for. And they see you at that, and they're like, they're amazed at that. And it's like, yeah, we're normal people. So being that way, yeah, we make mistakes. And just because we're on television, they get, you know, they get in hand. And so understand that, you know, yeah, you know, all of us weren't born with silver spoon. All of us weren't born with mom and dad. All of us weren't taught how to be a husband, how to be this thing. So we learn on the fly. And sometimes we get it right. Sometimes we don't. And just have some patience with it and things of that nature, you know, and stuff like that. So that's how it was. So that was me, you know, and stuff like that. The Greg now, man, is just, you know, I, you know, it's just a totally different person. Just like I said, I enjoy watching a good football guy. I think a lot of people thought the Super Bowl may have been boring, but I was like, what? A 13-3 game? That's defense. You know, and a lot of bad offense going on. A lot of bad offense going on, but it's decent. And nobody wants to see that. Everybody wants to see 48-55. It's like, man, I don't want to watch that. I'm sorry, I don't want to watch that. I better be good to play. So that's just me, man. I'm still that way, and, you know, it is what it is.
Greg, one more before we let you go. And I had the privilege of spending some time with Rayfield Wright, the Cowboys Hall of Fame tackle last week.
Big cat.
And I know, yeah, he went to Fort Valley State with, you know, your alma mater as well. He had some nice things to say about you. If you had an opportunity to spend some time with him?
Yes, I did. I think back in, maybe four years ago, you know, one or the other. But myself, Rachel, and Tyrone Poole, you know, Tyrone was the first round draft choice out of Pittsburgh from, you know, with Carolina. And we did a weekend where they did I got inducted into my college Hall of Fame, and they brought, you know, Rayfield back, and I think Rayfield was the speaker, and I called him Big Cat. You guys called him Rayfield, but I called him Big Cat because I think that was a nickname there, and that's what all the boys called. But just a wonderful guy, And, you know, Ray Field is, you know, he's always been, every time I've met, I met him several times when I was playing. And, you know, just eloquent, just, you know, carried himself, you know, in a way. Not only did he represent Fort Valley, you know, State College well, but he represented Dallas Cowboys well, but he represented his family. That's more important. He represented his family well. And, you know, I've always had high, you know, thoughts of Ray Field because he came back to Fort Valley when he, you know, and talked to us while we were in college. And then he also, like I said, when I was playing, I got a chance to meet him also. So, you know, we spent some time together and, just a wonderful human being.
Well, Greg, thank you so much for taking time out of your night to come back and be a part of the show. It's always a huge thrill for us to get to spend some time with you. Hopefully you'll come back and do it again sometime real soon. We really appreciate you.
Always a pleasure.
Well, listen, man, thank you guys for having me on, man. I feel like I'm a superstar when I come on here. You guys have me on there. So, you know, it doesn't seem like it's often enough, but, I know you guys have other guys to have on there. But listen, thank you so much for, you know, having me back, and thank you so much for thinking enough of me to put me on your show, man. You guys be blessed. Let's take care.
Take care, Greg. All the best for your family. Thank you so much.
All right, buddy. Take care.
See you, Greg. That's the great Greg Lloyd. And Bob, I sport the 95 when I'm watching the Steelers on the weekends, and quite sincerely, he's my favorite player. Staring at a couple of pictures of him right here on the wall in the studio. What a great guy. What a great storyteller. And boy, it's a huge thrill for me every single time he's a part of the show.
Oh, I love his intensity, Chris. He's going to turn 54 years old in a couple months. And he sounds as intense as he has ever been. You know, if you're starting a new team of maybe senior players, you probably want to put him on your squad because he's the rah-rah guy that'll knock some sense into people, right, Chris? And you get the idea that he just doesn't deal well with drama. And, I mean, I think of two words when we have him on, it's old school. And I'm sure he would, welcome that moniker. And he, one of our favorite guests.
Yes, he is. I'm looking forward to having him back on the show again soon. All right, we've got our next guest, Quinn Gray, hanging on the line. Going to get to Quinn on the other side of this real quick station break.